Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday evening and welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs. And here for the next hour or so, we're going to take your questions. We're going to answer them to the best of our abilities. Talk about Tennessee's 36-23 win over Vanderbilt, the 10-2 regular season, and what that means looking ahead to the college football playoffs. And, you know, transfer portal season is about to be here. Signing days on Wednesday. Brent, there is so much happening right now. Basketball season as well. And we got a deal going on at BallQuest.com. $1 for 7 days. $1 for 7 days. One of our best deals of the year. And so much more than what you see on YouTube, what we drop on the Journalist Quarters. It's a great time to join us right now. And you can do it for $1 for a week and then re-up from there.
Yeah, certainly. A lot of discussion. Obviously, lots to talk about. Plenty of things in recruiting. We're going to dive into that a little bit later here in the show. Matt Ray is going to join us. But we've been talking and updating things on recruiting all day today. And certainly talking about the college football playoff and a lot of, you know, people trying to project where things are going to be Tuesday night, and plenty of discussion that's taking place there and one of the busiest communities covering Tennessee athletics at the Generals Quarters. So it's a lot more than just YouTube. We do appreciate you watching here. We thank you for being a part. If you're not a part of the VolQuest family, we do encourage you to check us out. Don't think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. No doubt about that. And we call this the Rocky Top Rewind. It's presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers, they specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury, and all that and more. 80 years of combined experience. You can call them today for a free consultation. That phone number is 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185, and visit them online at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. We will not have a show next Sunday night, but the next time Tennessee plays football, we will have a show, so look forward to that. But Tennessee needed to have another game this season. In order for that to happen, you had to handle business in the Mid-State yesterday. Tennessee, a rough 4 minutes and 50 seconds to begin the game, but Tennessee responded, played exceptionally well the rest of the way, and finished out with a 36-23 win over Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the worst start you could have coming into it. And I don't know what happened on the kickoff. I don't know why that one didn't go in the end zone, if that was just a miss hit. I have a hard time believing that was a intentional sky kick. But for whatever reason, that ball didn't go in the end zone. And Tennessee's lane discipline was just atrocious on the kickoff. And I mean, 100 yards untouched is not the most common thing to happen. And that's what happened there. And then you compounded that with a Dylan Sampson fumble. Suddenly you're down 14-0, but it wasn't that Tennessee didn't panic. And I've mentioned this several times today. I thought the 3rd-and-14 completion to Chris Brazel on the second offensive series was huge, because it got Tennessee down into the end zone and got him going. I thought that was a big time play, a good throw. I thought he led the receiver well there. And then from then it was about once you got the lead, it was over, because Vanderbilt was just out of gas. I mean, they just did not have enough depth. They didn't have enough people. And Clark Lee talked after the game last night a lot about, well, we didn't have our energy. I'm like, man, your team is tired. You've lost 4 of your last 5. That's a team that's run out of gas is what's happened with that team. Quarterback's beat up. You got a lot of other guys beat up. I think they ran out of gas, and Tennessee took their will pretty quickly.
Yeah, they did. You said it earlier. They didn't panic. This team is veteran led. Miles Kitzman spoke about it after the game. It's, you know, Josh Heupel preaches next play, next play, and it's easier said than done. I recognize that, but again, like, you know, it was such a bad start, but you still had over 55 minutes left in the game. Like, there was still so much time, and one of our keys, you know, all week long was Tennessee needs to start well, because Vanderbilt's not capable of kind of coming from behind, and Tennessee didn't do that. But once you got the lead, as you mentioned, man, it was over. And the explosive plays returned. They only had one play, Brent, that went over 30 yards, but 5 plays that exceeded 20 yards. And they had a couple other plays that had like 18 yards, 17 yards. The 2 plays that Dante Thornton, the touchdown throws, all 4 of Nico's touchdown throws came off play action. And, you know, Tennessee's a heavy play action team, obviously. But I thought that was interesting. Good to see Dante Thornton find the end zone. Thought Nico threw the ball really well. His throw to Miles Kitzelman was just beautiful on what I think was the best drive of the year for Tennessee. 10 plays, 96 yards, 217, navigating right to halftime, leaving only 22 seconds on the clock. He made one bad throw, and it was a throw where it was behind the receiver, or it wasn't far enough, and it was too far inside. But overall, I think Nico played really well. Tennessee's offense played well, and you know, expected outcome by the end of it.
Yeah, I might argue with you on the drive. I thought the opening drive at Georgia was a really good drive in that hostile environment to settle them down there. But it was certainly one of the best yesterday. You talk about winning the middle eight. Tennessee dominated the middle eight of that football game, which you needed to do. I thought the throw to Kitzelman was his best throw of the day. He sold the fake really well. He had patience. He threw with accuracy. He threw a touch ball. But he threw it and threw it on time enough to give his tight end room to get his feet down in the end zone. That's one of those, if you wait too long, if you wait a half second longer there, he's out of room. And he didn't do that. So I thought it was a good play. I've not spoken to anybody today about it. I'm going to be fascinated to find out on the deep throw to Dante Thornton that went for 86 yards. A really good throw. He waited till the second window because he wasn't open in the first window. He threw it in the second window as he came open, so his anticipation there was pretty good. But, man, when you watch that on replay, that corner absolutely just left Mike Matthews on the other end. I mean, he could have punted that ball for a touchdown. Both of them were wide open, but it was pretty interesting because the throw to Thornton was a much, much more skilled throw than what you could have shot put it out to Mike Matthews. Because, I mean, that corner was gone. You won't see anybody more open than Mike Matthews was there. It tells you what kind of issues that Vanderbilt had. But, no, I thought Nico played well. I had his numbers in 10 things I think I learned about kind of where he's at right now from halftime, basically from that scramble in the Alabama game. He's played well. And he played well in the second quarter. I mean, and that's the big takeaway that I've got from this was the second quarter yesterday. I mean, Tennessee outscores Vanderbilt 17-0. They had 203 total yards. Vanderbilt had 57 total yards. Tennessee only had 52 yards rushing in the second quarter. Vanderbilt had 49. Nico had 151 yards passing in the second quarter to Vanderbilt's 8. Tennessee averaged 11.3 yards of play. Vanderbilt only had 3 yards of play in the second quarter. Just a complete domination by Tennessee in the second quarter that totally changed where that game was for the last 45 minutes. I mean, just a dominating second quarter. And then obviously they put it away with a little ground and pound action in the last 30 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, following that first quarter, Tennessee outscored Vanderbilt 29-6, I believe. And, blanked them in quarters 2 and 3. And you mentioned the middle eight. So did a really, really good job in that regard. I thought, the quarterback, he made a couple of nice runs. I think it was the third quarter, back-to-back runs. He didn't throw the ball very well. I knew he threw a touchdown there at the end. I thought Tennessee kind of got lazy, especially. I think James Pierce could have had a sack on that play. But overall, Tennessee handled that aspect of the Vanderbilt offense pretty well. Before we get into questions, I've already started a lot of those. So go ahead and keep asking the questions, guys, and we'll answer them. I do want to give you the opportunity to we didn't talk about it on the postgame mini pod much, but we talked about his day, Dylan Sampson. He had another career day of 179 yards rushing or whatever, but he did pass Travis Stevens for the single season rushing record for Tennessee. As it stands right now, Dylan Sampson is at 1,485 yards, surpassing Travis Stevens' 1,464 yards that he set back in 2001. He's going to be an All-American. He should have been a Doak Walker finalist, but what a year for Dylan Sampson. And he finished the regular season off on a high note. And, of course, Tennessee's going to need him in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's had a great year. Doesn't mean he's the most talented back to have ever played at the University of Tennessee. That's not what the discussion's about. The discussion is about how great of a year he's had. And he's had a terrific year. He's been the bell cow for Tennessee. He's the MVP for Tennessee. I think he's the MVP of the SEC. And should be. He showed up every week and he's played extremely well. Yards after contact, he's been much more physical than I think a lot of people give him credit for. And, I like where he's at. I think it's going to be fascinating to see what the NFL thinks of him and where they think he is. What do they think his speed is? Where do they think he is as a pass catcher out of the backfield? Is he a complimentary player? Do they think he's a guy that you can hang your hat on for a lot of carries? What kind of player is he? I know Ben's talking here. I don't know that he's Kamara-like. I mean, he's a different type of player. I think he's played in college a little more physical. But what does that translate to in the NFL? This is a deep NFL draft because of all the COVID guys. Yeah. It's not top heavy. Okay. It's not like there's 45 projected first rounders or 60 projected first rounders in a round of 32. It's not a top heavy draft, but it is backloaded. There's going to be more value in day 3 of the NFL draft than maybe we've ever seen in an NFL draft. And that's going to include a bunch of running backs. So I think it is going to be interesting to see kind of what the scouts think of him as we start to figure that out here in December and January, but before it gets to Dylan Sampson's decision-making time.
So the regular season is over. Championship weekend for conference championships are next weekend. Tennessee's not competing for the SEC, so no game this coming up weekend. Now, after all the championship games are over with, the College Football Playoff Committee will release their final rankings, and we'll see exactly what ranking Tennessee is and what seed line Tennessee's on. It'll be interesting on Tuesday to decipher, you know, what they think of Ohio State's loss, and we can get into that here in a moment. But ultimately, no game coming up this weekend. But, Brent, I want to ask you, and this is a question here from the chat, what's the next couple of weeks look like for Tennessee? Because normally, like in a, if Tennessee was going bowling or whatever, this week could kind of be like a light week. They work out, and then they come back and hit it hard. Of course, signing day is on Wednesday.
Right.
But what's this week look like from a football standpoint and really the coming weeks? Because, I mean, Tennessee's not going to have a game for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be much like a bye week. You're going to treat this much like a bye week. So you're going to work out a day or two this week and kind of practice and do some things for a couple of days. And then remember, classes end on Tuesday. Wednesday's a study day. Finals start on Thursday. So you've got finals Thursday through I think the following Tuesday or something like that. So I think you're going to have, in that situation, you're going to have them go like a regular bye week type game or bye week type week, and then they'll get back into it with practice. You can practice some things right now, but I mean, you got to wait and find out who your opponent is. So no. I think right now it's more like a bye week, and then you jump back into a little bit more of an extensive bye week or less bye week, more extensive workout the week of finals, and then you'll get into a full game week mode.
Tennessee was shorthanded a wide receiver yesterday. Of course, Brew McCoy did not go. He was dressed. I think he was available but didn't play. Of course, nursing a little bit of an injury. What's the latest on him, Brent? Then, of course, Squirrel White. We saw him after the game. He had a sling, his hand in a sling. Looked like he had some ace bandages kind of on his bicep area. He was banged up. Of course, Dante Thornton caught the two touchdown passes in the first half. Didn't play in the second half. That looked like a lower leg type deal. Good for Mike Matthews, and I thought Chris Brazel played his best game in a Tennessee uniform. I thought he had a couple of big third down receptions, and I think these next couple of weeks are going to be good for Tennessee to get healthy, because if they had to play on Saturday, who knows if you'd have Brew, Squirrel, or Dante Thornton available.
Yeah, I think for me right now, Squirrel's kind of the biggest question mark. I mean, what does that look like? I mean, Brew has got to get a hamstring, you know, back right. I think it was a little bit tender through the week. Thought he'd be able to go. And
it's cold.
I think the cold weather, he had a hard time getting loose, and he tried to get loose in warm-ups. And I think it was one of those, as they went through the warm-ups without gear on, it was tight, and he had a hard time getting it loose, trying to get stretched out. And then when you watched him not do anything really in warm-ups when he had his pads on, it was going to be hard to – you just didn't think he was going to play. Thornton was listed actually as an upper body injury by Tennessee, a midsection injury is kind of how it was described. I think Thornton's going to be fine. I don't think there's anything of significance at this point with him. I think Squirrel's the biggest one, and then we'll see where Dylan Sampson is. Sampson left with a pretty decent sized limp. He was tired. He was hurting a little bit. He knows how to really get his body back. He's got a pretty good regimen in terms of recovery. So I think it's beneficial to Tennessee on a couple of fronts that you're not playing, in this game this weekend. And the biggest factor of that is you got a chance to get healthy. And I think Tennessee's got to get healthy at the skill guys. Again, I feel okay with Brew and Dante. I just think Dylan's toughness, he'll be there. The Squirrel thing, we'll have to wait and see, because that could be a little more significant. I think they're going to do some further testing and kind of see where that goes.
Got chippy at times yesterday, and it's rivalry week across college football. And you saw, you know, flag week. I'll be interested to know if flags will be allowed, you know, next year in terms, because there were three fights about it yesterday. But there was some chippiness with Tennessee and Vanderbilt right before the half. You saw Bryson Eason, and Andrew wants to know about that, man. That's actually asking about the portal. It's a whether if he wants to come back and use his eligibility. If he's going to use his eligibility, it's going to be here in Knoxville, right?
Yeah, he has no desire to enter the portal. The question is he going to go to the league, or is he going to play college football? I don't know what happened on that final play of the first half on the kneel down. Something bothered Bryson Eason. I don't know if you felt like the offensive lineman played that play and maybe kind of took a cheap shot there or did something, but he was clearly bothered.
He was animated.
And he was very animated with the official. He was trying to explain himself to the official. I don't know exactly what happened. I got to go back and watch up and see what happened there. But something bothered Eason. And Omari Thomas was commenting in there, too, with the official. Both of them were upset about something. It was pretty chippy, as you would expect that game to be. But I thought the officials did a pretty good job of getting that and keeping that game under control without it getting out of control. The flag thing after games is – I mean, that's got to end, okay? I mean, like, I get it. I know Baker Mayfield did it years ago, and a lot of people thought it was cool and all this kind of stuff. But, I mean, I'll give Steve Sarkisian credit. He got his team off the logo at Texas A&M and said there's no point in doing that. But, I mean, think about the stuff that you had this weekend. I mean, Nebraska's not shaking anybody's hands pregame. Then you got – who was it stomping on the logo and somebody in the Big Ten was like kicking at the logo pregame, and maybe it was Michigan State or somebody was doing it at Michigan State. I don't remember which one of those I saw on social media. And then you got all the flag, you know, the flag planting things. And I mean, that's just, I'm like, Florida, what are you doing, man? Florida State's terrible. Why are you planting a flag there? Like, I think that's got to end. I don't know how you end it. You know, I don't know what you do, but something's got to happen there. Cause I do understand players from a pride standpoint, especially while you're still in gear, you know, when you're still in your full gear, you're not going to let that happen on your watch. So I think that's something that has to be looked at in the off season.
Yeah, it was Florida State, of course, Ohio, Michigan. It happened, Auburn, Alabama. Yeah, it was all over the country yesterday. Somebody asked earlier in the chat, I can't find the question about, do we think there's going to be any suspensions for Ohio State, Michigan? Came out, they fined them both $100,000 today or whatever it was, the Big Ten did. And that's only relevant because Tennessee could potentially square off against Ohio State in the first round of the playoffs. But do you see any suspensions coming from the Ohio State side?
No. The Big Ten's not taking action there going into the playoffs. They're not suspending anybody. It's not, I mean, it's just not going to, I mean, I don't think there's any way that happens.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Somebody was asking about Peyton Lewis injury. Did you get any word on that?
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine. I think that was kind of a precautionary thing. You know, the old upper body type injury. I think he got dinged up. You know, I think he's going to be fine. Hey, I'll say this, for a guy who hadn't played football in a month, Deshaun Bishop was back in stride pretty quickly. That was a solid day for Bishop, 60 yards rushing. I thought he was really good in pass protection, which is where you think it's going to drop off. He had a great blitz pickup in the second half in that game. I thought Bishop was a really nice surprise, creating a 1-2 punch there when Peyton Lewis went out. I thought Bishop played well, jumped right back in like he hadn't missed a whole lot of work. And I think he can help Tennessee down the stretch here. I think there's a lot of confidence in Deshaun Bishop. Maybe spelling the Dylan Sampson a little bit more, because obviously Dylan's had a pretty heavy workload.
Yeah, just think about where you are now towards, you know, entering this next phase of the season, the postseason. You love Dylan Sampson. You know, Peyton Lewis was rushed into action for pretty much four games that Deshaun Bishop was out, and you feel pretty good about what you have in Peyton Lewis now. Now you get Deshaun Bishop back. He showed you some things early in the season, and then right here, that 13 carries yesterday I think was huge for him. And you're right, that blitz pickup. You had a guy screaming from the second level, and he stepped right up, blocked him. I thought that was great to see. So you feel pretty good about the depth that you've created at running back, and we'll see what Dylan Sampson does. I would assume he's going to the NFL draft when this is all said and done. But that sort of 1-2 punch there of Peyton Lewis, Deshaun Bishop, Cam Seldon's got a little bit of run here lately. You feel much better about the depth of the position now for the playoffs and, of course, for 2025.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, we'll keep an eye on what happens, you know, portal-wise in 2025. If anything goes there, you know, I was thinking today, when Jerry Mack got the job at Kennesaw State, congratulations to Jerry. Jerry's one of the good guys out there, great guy to deal with, and happy for him. I know he's wanted an opportunity to get back and be a head coach. You know, he recruited Khalif Keith, you know, not saying he would leave, but, you know, it's one of those deals. Does that give him a pause to think, particularly if he feels like he's in a deep rotation and, you know, he's getting recruited over? What does he look like? What does he think? You know, all those types of things play into what's going to happen in terms of what your 25 roster looks like. It's really hard to project on December 1st what your 25 roster might be, because just because the portal hole is getting ready to open up, and you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, you think about it. I mean, Tennessee completely, you know, lost so many in the secondary, but then made their secondary better because they got Jermod McCoy out of the secondary. So nobody was projecting what the secondary would look like that last December, but it's turned out to be the biggest reason for improvement in Tennessee's defense. So anything can happen.
Michael says that somebody said that Pavier might have hit the, you know, Omari Thomas or Eason with the ball after the kneel down. I didn't see it, but certainly okay. That could have happened.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and look. I didn't yeah. see it. I'll go back and see if I can get a better viewpoint and see if something.
And I'm not going to lie, I skipped over that on the rewatch because I knew it was a kneel down. On that note, talking about the secondary, I thought about this today. You know, it's the era of 2024-25 college football, so you got to, you know, a lot of times it's a business, but think about this secondary for Tennessee. You lose Will Brooks, who's played solid football for you this year, but you're likely to return Andre Turnzine. He's got another year of eligibility. Jacoby Thomas, Idris Farouk, John Slaughter at safety. Your star, Boo Carter. Okay, Christian Harrison made some plays yesterday. I think he's gotten better this year. And I almost wonder, like, in Jordan Thomas as well, he's hurt. You know, Thomas could play safety. I wonder if Christian Harrison can play safety, but you got Ricky Gibson, you got Jermod McCoy. I believe Jalen McMurray has another year of eligibility. I mean, you're so many questions for so many seasons about the pass defense, about the secondary, about the DBs. You're sitting pretty, you know, now, and if you handle business this offseason, you're going to look good having one of the better secondaries coming back for 25.
Yeah, and the handling business this offseason is going to be what does the NIL deals look like? Because, I mean, those guys are going to be commodities. I mean, corners are what everybody's looking for in the – not everybody, but a lot of people are looking for in the portal. So you have to make sure you got a plan in place and take care of that. That's part of what we're dealing with and roster management this, you know, every offseason. And that's a place where you're going to have to get some things right and make sure that you guys are taking care of those guys in the secondary. You know, that's just the way it is. And you know, I know there's a lot of talk. You probably got a star board. Matt's going to come on in a bit and talk about recruiting, but I know a lot of people are asking about Shady Hayward and his decision to decommit to Tennessee. You know, I think some people around Shady have been working some different angles and some different schools, and Florida's a school that right now, you look at what they've done the last 24 hours in recruiting, they're pretty aggressive right now to close in the NIL world. Yeah. And, you know, that looks like I don't think he's going to give Tennessee a chance to flip that back. It sounds like that's done to Florida, but Matt will have more coming on, you know, coming about with that. And I think that one probably blindsided everybody a little bit, because I don't know that Shady knew everything that was going on behind the scenes with all the people around him. And here it is, bam. And it feels like that one's probably pretty much done. So we'll see what happens with anybody else. We know Onus is visited Florida as well. So what does that look like? We'll get all the updates from Matt coming up here a little bit later in the program.
Yeah. Michael chimes in and says the back seven should be okay, if not good, just need to restock and develop up front. It's funny. Like, again, I know there's still games to be played. Tennessee's in the playoffs, and that's great. And we're going to preview all that from every different angle. But thinking about 25 as we enter the month of December, we just talked about the secondary. You look at what you have at linebacker. You've got so many young guys who have played so much football. And then up front, you're losing a lot of the interior, and you're going to lose James Pierce. But you're still bringing back a bevy of guys up front who have played, have got experience, and we'll see some other guys probably getting that rotation maybe from this class. But, man, this defense, and we'll see what Tim Banks wants to do this offseason. I would imagine he's going to be a popular name and a lot of head coaching carousel talks. But this defense, once again, from an experience standpoint, has a chance to be really, really good entering next year. Probably one of the better units in the SEC.
There's going to be a lot of talk about the big drop-off Tennessee's going to have on the defensive line. But I think when you start looking at it, start doing some research on the defensive line, that they're going to be better than people think. I think Hobbs has played well. I think Jackson Moy is a good player in there. If you could get Bryson Easton to come back, that would be a big win for you. I think Joshua Joseph has had a really nice year, really consistent year. He's done some really good things. You need Caleb Herring to take another step. Jordan Ross needs to come on, but yeah, Jason Jenkins, you got Dominique Bailey. I think the question is, where is that kind of wow you speed guy? Is that Ross? Who's that going to be? What does that look like? You know, does Dye come in and give you some help right away off the edge in this recruiting class? you know, we'll have to see what that looks like. But they've done a great job building depth. I mean, I looked out there yesterday and I'm like, it's the second quarter. Tennessee's fighting like crazy to try to get control of this game. And Edwin Spillman's playing linebacker for the first time in 7 weeks. He's on the field. It's like, what? Okay, here we go. And so I think their commitment on that side of the ball to play a lot of people has benefited them greatly. Now, I think on the offensive side of the ball, and I'm going to steal another question. I don't know if you started, but I saw it bouncing through there. I mean, Tennessee's got to continue to play Mike Matthews if they get all these guys back healthy. You know, there's no reason not to continue to play Mike Matthews. Chris Brazel's got to get some opportunities. You got to get him going a little bit early, right? I mean, look at how different he was after he caught an early pass in that game yesterday. So you got to continue to work those guys and make them a part of the rotation. I think that they got – I think they should have brought Mike Matthews a little further along quickly. I know he missed all of fall camp, but you can't tell me you couldn't have schemed some things up for him to give him some opportunities to get him going a little bit better or a little bit earlier than what you did. I mean, you've played him 100 snaps the last couple of games. He was thrown into action yesterday. And guess what? He did okay. I mean, he was fine, right? I mean, it wasn't like you threw the ball where and he was running a completely different route. Or
he wasn't running the wrong way.
I mean, he looked like he belonged out there, okay. Was he a dominant guy with 10 catches or 10 targets? No, but I mean, he's a guy that looks like can go ahead and help you. So go ahead and get him on the field and play him. I think Tennessee has to continue to do that with him moving forward.
Yeah, I think, and Michael points this out, what about the 25-0 line? Where will that be? I mean, it's that's the biggest question mark this offseason. And again, the transfer portal is going to open up next Monday on the 9th, and we got that great deal, so you don't miss out on any of it. But like that's where the conversation is going to be. It's you're losing Spraggins, you're losing Campbell, you're losing Dane Davis. We'll see about Andre Kierick. Technically, he's out of eligibility, but didn't go through senior day. I would assume that they're going to try to, you know, see what they can get with him. You bring back Lance Hurd. How many of those young offensive linemen do you feel good about? And if so, does that mean you are still taking, you know, being aggressive in the portal? Is it more interior guard center than tackle? I think that's going to be a big theme for the month of December is the offensive line specifically in the portal.
Well, and again, I mean, you're not playing with Monopoly money. Okay, this is not a situation where it's just you go and pay for everybody and anybody in the portal at any position. I mean, you got to be selective in what you're doing there. At some point in time, some high school players have to be developed to play on this offensive line. It's going to have to happen. Okay, and I know some people say, well, I mean, you guys talk about that all the time, but the defensive line, look what they've had. You know, all those guys were super seniors and they've gone and got this transfer and they've done that. And I understand that, but I, you know, Davin Hobbs is playing, Herring's playing, James Pierce was a high school player, Joseph is a high school player. I mean, they haven't lived that heavily in the portal on the defensive line. They've plugged and added some pieces, but it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been a situation where they've just gone out and said, hey, you're a plug-and-play starter like they have on the offensive line. So when you look at this offensive line, I mean, does David Sanders have to start from day one? I mean, that's a guy you're investing a bunch in. Oh, yeah. I think he expects to play early. You know, are you committed to doing that? Is he going to be ready right out of the gate? How quickly can you get him ready if he arrives here in January, which he's a midterm enrollee? You know, where's Jesse Perry? Where's Satterwhite? One of those, Satterwhite or Anderson is going to play the center position for you. Is Perry going to be a guard? You know, what do you do with him? I think you'd like a lot about what Jesse Perry's about. You know, where's Sham? Where are some of these guys in your program? I'm not saying you don't go to the portal to get some help, okay? But how much help are you going to get when you consider how much you've kind of got invested in where you are with your offensive line? And the number of high school players that you've got. I mean, at some point, somebody's got to be able to step in and help you there. And we'll see what that looks like. You know, I do think they'll be active in the portal with the offensive linemen, but I don't know that you're going to go get four or five offensive linemen, maybe one or two, you know, but I don't know that you're just going to go that heavy on the offensive line.
Some point, somebody that you recruit's going to have to step up and start.
I don't think Larry Johnson can play inside. You know, at guard, I know he's played some, but I don't know that he's quick enough in a small space in there to play inside. But somebody's going to have to step in there and help you and play at the guard position and be a factor there. That's not just a bunch of portal guys. I mean, I think it's hard to see Andre Kirik winning an appeal. He's going to appeal off five snaps. He played five snaps in the Kentucky game, which was his fifth game played a year ago. That's what they're going to appeal, is that he played five snaps. He got hurt in that game, which is why he didn't finish. He didn't play anymore. Do you win that appeal? I don't know. We'll see. But that's what he's going to appeal upon and what he's trying to win.
He's been good for you this year. Cooper Mays has started for you since 2020, 2021. Javonte Spraggins has played a lot of football for you. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of movement there up front. And that's going to be one of the biggest stories of the offseason. But Tennessee still got football to be played here in the playoffs. We'll talk a little playoffs. We'll continue to answer your questions. Matt Ray's going to join us in about 10 minutes to talk some recruiting, all that and more, as we continue on here on the Rocky Top Rewind. I do want to tell you about our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP, Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey. Their Tennessee fans are good guys, and they can help you if you are in a bind. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. T and trial lawyers. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury, DUI, homicide, assault, divorce, custody, alimony, parental rights, all that and more. Personal injuries such as car wrecks, accidents. Over 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout the federal courts in Northeast Tennessee. The firm has a vast amount of trial experience. This practice has been in place for 43 years, with this specific partnership in place since 2012, and they have partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP can help you. Go see them in person today at 142 Cherokee Street in Kingsport, Tennessee. 423-245-4185 is a phone number that you can dial for a free consultation, or visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP, you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. Welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind. Every Sunday night during football season here, VolQuest.com YouTube channel. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs, and let's go ahead and continue to work through some of your questions. If I can find the questions here. Oh, here we go. All right, let's go to Josh. Appreciate the super chat. Josh, he said, I thought this week was the best with Nico and RPOs. Made good decisions on when to keep it. Threw the slants to perfection. Hope the light came on. You know, Brent, I thought he's played some good football here lately. He didn't start the UTEP game very well, and he's been far from perfect, obviously. Josh Hopple even joked about that in the post-game press conference, saying that the only quarterback that played perfectly was him. But I thought he played really well yesterday outside of one throw. You referenced, and you've done it several times, the scramble against Alabama back on the third Saturday in October. Third quarter scramble. He scrambled for 26 yards. And since then, it's almost like the lights come on. 12 touchdowns, one pick. Over 1,200 yards passing, 68-69% completion. He's been really good here towards the back half of the season, and that's good. That's what you want for a young quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt. And he got really comfortable yesterday because Vanderbilt's pass rush was non-existent.
Yeah.
Yesterday was not an easy day, but it was a comfortable day for the quarterback. When you don't feel like you're going to get hit, you're not running for your life, man, the game's slow, and you get to see everything. Somebody asked a question earlier about balls being tipped. And why that was the case. A couple of balls that he had batted in the middle of the field were batted by linebackers who were trying to recover from biting on play action. And he was trying to throw it into a guy's stomach or into his chest, and guy made an athletic play there. I mean, it wasn't a situation where necessarily the ball was low or flat. It wasn't batted at the line of scrimmage. I mean, he had the one batted on the little receiver screen to Squirrel White. But
yeah, it came off the edge.
That's not Nico's fault. The two in the middle were not batted by defensive linemen. They were batted by linebackers who were retreating because they were up biting on play action. So good plays by them. I don't think it was necessarily horrible throws by Nico in that regard. So, yeah, I thought he played well. I thought he made good decisions. I thought he adjusted very nicely in the third quarter to what Vanderbilt was doing, because Vanderbilt decided to bring extra people. It wasn't a three-man rush then. They were trying to bring some linebackers in different ways. And I thought he knew they had the lead, and he took care of the ball. You know, he was protective of the football, didn't take chances with it, used his legs, and I thought he was solid. Again, I think you would love to have a day that you can get started the way he did, where you have nobody in your face, you have no pressure. But I thought he played well yesterday.
This one made me laugh because I said it on the podcast last night. Hubs, please tell Heupel to hand the ball to running backs, not tight ends on fourth and short. And here's the thing. They did it at Georgia and scored a touchdown. So it is what it is. I'm just not a fan of that play call. I know the Titans did it in London with Luke Stalker a couple years ago. And it's like, oh my gosh, you lost the game. I don't mind him going for it on fourth down in that situation. Went with the jumbo. You had Deshaun Bishop as the deep back. You had Moy in there. Of course, you had Kitzelman. It just feels like there's not a whole lot of room to kind of get going. The broadcast when I was doing the rewatch said they should have done the tush push. What do you think about the jumbo handing off to the fullback? And they've done it twice. One time you scored a touchdown off of it. The other time you got stuffed short, fourth and short.
Well, your center's got to make the block. And listen, I love Cooper. Cooper didn't make that block there. If he makes the block, then Kitzelman can dive for a first down and everybody goes, well, it's a great play. You know, do I love the play? I mean, yeah, I don't know that I wouldn't prefer it to be in the hands of Deshaun Bishop or Dylan Sampson. But I'm a guy who came from the school of Tony Thompson and Little Man Stewart and guys who dove over a pile. You know, they dove over the top of it. And you don't see that happening much anymore. So I get it. I don't love it. I think you can go to the well too much on that one. But again, if you make that block up front, then he's diving over and you got a first down.
Again, if the play works, it's a great play call. Oh, sure. Somebody, one of my college coaches actually texted me on Friday night when the high school game we were doing, Sevier County had an onside kick. They just took the lead, kicked the onside kick, got it. And we're like, oh, what a great play call. Oh, my gosh. You know, it's like, well, I mean, you guys criticized the coach for doing that last year. I'm like, well, it didn't work then, right? This one worked. So it was brilliant. It was brilliant.
Exactly.
Smithy wants to know about Bennett Warren. We talk about Jesse Perry. We've seen him a little bit. Talk about some of these young guys, Max Anderson, William Satterwhite. Bennett Warren, again, he was not here in spring. He was a summer arrival, so he was kind of behind the eight ball a little bit. But he's a guy that they really liked in that class last year, a highly rated four-star prospect. And I think this winter is going to be a good measuring stick for him in terms of how close he is to helping.
Yeah, I think the question is, could he be a guy that played inside? I mean, obviously he's a tackle, and I mean, David Sanders is coming in. He's a tackle all the way. But is there a guy that you could slide inside? Could Bennett do that? I don't know the answer to that. You know, we'll have to see. I think this is an important offseason for him. He came in decent shape. I don't think he was in primo shape. This is a big offseason in the weight room for Bennett Warren, and then kind of see where he factors in into that spot, because they can be a little bit tackle heavy, okay? But you know, could somebody slide inside and play guard? We'll have to see what that looks like. It could make for a really interesting spring practice, unless they've gone out and gotten four college kids and, you know, kind of push the high school kids back down the line. But if they haven't, I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
Ed wants to know, can we put the rest that cold temperature does not affect Nico's throwing ability? Yeah, it was sunny when the game started, so it didn't feel as cold. The sun went away. It was a chilly, chilly 38, 40 degrees, and Nico balled out. So it was a fair question. I mean, I don't think a huge deal was made about it going into the game, but it was a fair question. But I think he obviously showed that he can play in the cold.
Yeah, I don't think I worded it exactly. I mean, I think if you read what I wrote in the war room, you could have interpreted that to mean that there was a real question about that. That's not what I was trying to say, because I read it, wrote it, then I edited it, and I knew what I was saying, but I don't know that it came across that way. Nobody in the complex had concerns about Nico in the cold. It was never a thought. It was never one of those, oh, you know, he can't play in the cold, or wow, that's a real problem. Nobody in the building had any concerns about that all week long. And he obviously went out and played well.
We're going to get Matt Ray to join us here in a couple of seconds. Josh back in. He said, I think it's pretty easy for a home game. Root for the favorites in conference championship weekend, Oregon in the Big Ten, Texas in the SEC. We get a home game over two-loss Penn or three-loss Georgia. I think it ends up being us hosting Indiana or Penn. I think, again, it'll be interesting to see what the committee does with Ohio State on Tuesday. Ohio State lost to its rival, a 6-win Michigan team that was a 21-point dog at home. That's a horrible loss, but Ohio State does have 2 wins over teams in the top 10. What does the committee do with Ohio State? But I agree completely. If Georgia loses, they're still in my opinion, but 3 losses, they're not going to be ahead of Tennessee and Penn State as well. I think those are good scenarios for Tennessee to be on that host line.
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely that's what you want to happen. Root for the favorites. All of that helps. I would not get too caught up in the Ohio State behind Tennessee and the coaches and AP poll for that to translate automatically to the college football playoff rankings on Tuesday. So we'll have to wait and see. Now, I think you have a precedent in the college football playoff rankings because Georgia took such a hard tumble losing on the road at Ole Miss. Now, they came back the next week. Well, we've self-corrected or whatever that case may be. So how much do they do it that way? What I don't want to hear from the college football playoff committee is I don't want to hear some narrative that we're going to give Ohio State some kind of a pass because rivalry games are different. Okay. I don't want to hear that deal at all. You were a 3-touchdown favorite at home. I don't care how hard of a rivalry game it is and how big of a struggle it's been to win that game. I don't want to hear that, well, we take that into a little different consideration because it's a rivalry game or whatever. And when you look at the biggest losses or the most brutal, ugly losses, worst losses, whatever you want to describe it from an adjective standpoint in college football this year, Notre Dame losing at home to Northern Illinois is by far the worst because that's a mid-American or mid-level MAC team, right? They're middle of the pack in the MAC. The second worst loss to me is Ohio State losing at home to Michigan as a 3-touchdown underdog. The third one for me is Ole Miss losing at home to Kentucky. To me, those are the three worst. And then you start talking about Alabama to Oklahoma. But when you talk about playoff teams, and Matt, jump on in here, and Eric, jump in here if you disagree with me. But if you talk about playoff teams and their losses, those are the worst losses, potential playoff teams. Those are the worst losses in college football. That's why I don't think Ole Miss has an argument. Because I think now with Ole Miss on the outside looking in, trying to give you a beautiful resume, here's our resume, we're selling our resume. Now the Kentucky loss shows up on your resume. I don't think it shows up when you're in, but when you're trying to get in, now all of a sudden it's like, you know, if you get in with a black jacket at a black jacket event, it's not really a black jacket. They're probably not going to kick you out if you get in. But if you're standing at the door, they may not let you in because it's not a nice enough jacket. Ole Miss's resume looks bad because they're on the outside trying to get in. And I think it's that Kentucky loss that's going to rear its head for Ole Miss.
Matt Ray, how much can Greg Sankey maybe have something to say about that? We often joke that he's the most powerful man in sports. He's not on that committee. He's not leading that board. But, you know, three SEC teams are going to get in, maybe a fourth, but pushing to get Tennessee to host over a lot of those reasons Brent and I just pointed out about the quality of loss that Ohio State just took, how Georgia plummeted after it lost to, at the time, a really good Ole Miss team. Think Greg Sankey has anything to say about this?
In my opinion, I mean, I don't know if Greg Sankey has anything to say about it or not, but I think Ohio State is going to take a little bit more of a tumble than people give them credit for. That's just my opinion. I think this was a really bad loss. You laid an egg at home. You have the scene in post game. For me, I think there's a scenario where Ohio State can end up hosting a home playoff game. But I think if it were me, I would probably put Tennessee and Georgia ahead of Ohio State. And, you know, you have the Buckeyes right there on that cusp. And depending on how things play out, then, you know, you go from there. I don't think that, you know, the committee can justify not dropping them harder than they are. I know they have them high, 1-point loss or whatever it was to Oregon in Oregon, but this loss is, as Brent said, the second worst loss for a playoff team outside of Notre Dame to Northern Illinois.
You know, it's interesting because, again, Georgia fell pretty hard when it lost to Ole Miss. Tennessee fell, 5 spots when it lost to Georgia. I'm interested, again, to see what they do with Ohio State. And I think if Ohio State is ranked ahead of Tennessee on Tuesday, then you kind of know what needs to happen conference championship weekend for Tennessee to host. If Tennessee is ranked in front of Ohio State, then I think you're sitting pretty. I mean, things can always happen, but I think you're kind of sitting pretty. Matt, you and I were talking about this last night. The Miami loss, and here's where we all have to, like, again, this is the first year of the expanded playoffs, so ranking versus seeding versus automatic bids, we're all trying to figure it out. The Miami loss, in my opinion, Matt, doesn't really do much for Tennessee right now. Like, it's not going to hurt Tennessee, but, you know, the ACC is going to get one of those four byes. So you're really just replacing Miami with an SMU or Clemson when it's all said and done. I think, again, from yesterday, I think the Ohio State means that much more to Tennessee.
Yeah, Ohio State definitely means more to Tennessee in terms of that, because if you go ahead of them, then you're sitting there, you know, last weekend of the season, conference championship weekend, there's nothing more Ohio State can do. There's nothing more you can do. So there's no justification to come back and say, we're going to do this versus this. You know, regardless of if Penn State beats Oregon or if Oregon beats Penn State or whatever, you know, the conference championships are going to be interesting. I mean, again, if you're Texas, you finally get a quality win over Texas A&M on your resume. But if you get slacked by Georgia again, to me, your resume still doesn't stack up with Tennessee's or, you know, maybe even, I mean, gosh, a Miami at that point, like a two-loss Miami, and I'm not very high on the Hurricanes, but when you put it into perspective, they lost to a Georgia Tech team that went toe-to-toe with Georgia for 8 overtimes in Athens, and you lost to Syracuse, who Fran Brown has in the top 25. Like, if you're looking at, you know, Miami in you know, comparison to some of these others, they lost 2 games that, you know, aren't as bad as maybe they would have seemed at the first of the year if you would have told them that they lost them. Now, obviously, I think if you're a Miami fan, you're furious. But, you know, it's an interesting dilemma for the committee for sure.
Yeah, I think the ACC is – well, first of all, let me pull the curtain back a little bit. I was the one in the group text driving down the road last night going, hey, that Miami loss means that's a Tennessee home game, right? Everybody's like, whoa, 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 what are you talking about? I was in the middle of munching on my Dunkin' Donuts from the Love's truck stop in the Pilot truck stop in Carthage. Pilot is a Pilot stop, by the way. And so then you start to think about it. You're like, yeah, okay, that doesn't really have an effect. To me, the winner of that game last night was Alabama. Because if Alabama's going to get in as a 3-loss team, or if a 3-loss SEC team is going to get in, they need the ACC to be a one-team bid, a one-team league. Yeah. Well, if SMU were to beat and beats Clemson in the championship game, obviously they get the bid, Clemson's out, and then does Miami, because of their 2 losses, are they out and you don't get a second team in to the ACC, you know, or in the playoff as an ACC team? So I think that's going to be interesting to see.
So again, a winner would be Alabama and South Carolina. I mean, South Carolina, they have 3 losses, and Alabama's got the head-to-head over them. But, like, South Carolina's another one of those teams saying, okay, well, you know, we're if the ACC is a one-bid league and that opens up the door for another SEC team, then South Carolina's kind of in that fold now as well, because A&M is now out. Ole Miss is out. Ole Miss is still right there. But South Carolina, again, my point is another team that's kind of right on the doorstep that – has the most to gain from another seat at the table for the SEC.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it put them into that conversation. Oh, and Lane Kiffin's selling it today that they should be in over South Carolina because they went to South Carolina and smacked them around. And he's right, head-to-head it does. And his argument makes sense. And so I think if you're Tennessee, you're just elated you're not having those arguments. Because, I mean, if Florida doesn't beat Ole Miss for you, we're sitting here tonight and you're trying to figure out Tennessee's resume and stack it up against some other teams to as a 2-loss team. Can they get in? Can they not get in? You know, all of that's going to be in play. How much are they going to punish the championship game loser? And I think this is a really interesting debate. For me, it is. I don't think they should be hammered in terms of you're out of the playoff, because I think you want to protect that game a little bit. But I don't think you don't move them if they lose that game as well. Because if there's no punishment at all for losing that game, Matt, why should any coach play his starters in that game? Why do you not just treat that game like it's week 17 of the NFL season? And I know everybody's going to say, well, you want to be a conference championship. Fans are judging you off whether or not you make a move in the playoffs. So if anybody's close in that game, you're going to be setting them, if you establish a precedent, that losing that game means nothing to your seeding.
Hey, yeah, and the same for Penn State and the Big Ten. Sorry to cut you off. Same for Penn State and the Big Ten as well. If they lose that game, that's a 2-loss, then like they should move down as well. I mean, with a 3-loss Georgia. So I mean, I think it's,
I mean, particularly if you get hammered in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, the result of that game, you know, I think it's got to carry some weight, win or lose.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Georgia team that's 2 losses, I mean, again, I don't think you're going to see them get booted out of the playoff if they lose. But you've got to move, because, I mean, if not, what incentive is there for Kirby Smart to say, hey, we're going to try to go win this and get this first round bye. No, we'll just get healthy and we'll take whatever seed they throw at us and we'll go on the road and play whichever one of these Big Ten teams it may be and then line up with the ACC champion in the next round and go from there. Well, you know, we'll take our health and, you know, not try to get a Trevor Etienne who's dealing with a pain tolerance issue, you know, back this week. We'll get some of our receivers healthy, some of our offensive linemen healthy. You know, I don't know. I think you have to have some form of, you know, movement if you lose that game. Now, with a Georgia, I mean, it becomes interesting if they lose by, you know, just 3 or something. You know, Do they just maybe fall a spot? I don't think it's going to be anything drastic, but
right.
Again, it's going to be interesting with Penn State. I think this conference championship weekend for them, they've got a lot to play for, just in the fact that how do they stack up again? Because Ohio State's going to have that head-to-head with them. You go back to two losses. They both lost to Oregon. Ohio State beat Penn State at home. So there's something there. I think it's just a lot of interesting scenarios. I mean, I was texting with a friend of mine on Friday night during about the third overtime of Georgia and Georgia Tech, and said, have you just kind of thought about all the scenarios that could play out and, like, you know, what's left on the table? And then, you know, Georgia obviously wins that game. That could have created a, you know, its own set of dynamics. But like, starting with Miami losing, starting with Ohio State losing, like we saw, you know, again, probably a playoff game for Miami against Syracuse, and they weren't able to finish it off. They might find a way to sneak in, but they need some help now.
Well, back to Josh's question about Penn State not having and having zero quality wins. What do you do if you're in that committee and you're in that room and you're sitting there and you're going, okay, if Penn State gets hammered on a neutral field against Oregon, and then I look at Ohio State's resume, they went to Oregon and lost by 1 point, okay? Yep. Then Ohio State beat Penn State head-to-head, which I think should count for something. But then I've got this horrific loss by Ohio State to Michigan at home by 3 touchdowns. That's a little bit of a snapshot of what the 13 people in the room are talking about.
And then again, they beat Indiana, which is a top 10 team.
Right. So there's the snapshot of like, okay, where do you – what weight do you carry? Is it head-to-head? Is it a bad loss? Is it a good loss versus another good loss? Like, how do you weigh all that out? Which I think is part of the dilemma that you have when you get 13 people in the room trying to figure out what to do on this committee.
Well, here's my you know, scenario with Tennessee and Ohio State. I mean, Tennessee's bad loss is Arkansas, and it's not a pretty loss. But the Vols came out, grabbed a lead in the second half of that game, ultimately didn't win. But, you know, it's in Arkansas. It's at night. It's not an easy place to go play. If you're Ohio State, you mustered up 10 points against a Michigan team that has severely struggled on your home field. You had no downfield passing attack. You couldn't run the football. You got beat on both sides of the trenches. Michigan fans will tell you, we beat Ohio State without a quarterback, basically. Like, that's been the theme from Michigan fans. It's like the funny thing to them. We beat Ohio State without a quarterback. I mean, the Mullins kid carried it 32 times. So, I mean, to me, Tennessee moving forward from that Arkansas game, yes, they had the Georgia loss. But Ohio, you know, looking at it in reverse for Ohio State, I think there's just – to me, I'm ranking Tennessee ahead of Ohio State. But that's just where I'm at with it. I don't know that happens. I just think that's a worse loss.
Yeah. No matter what, though, the committee, you know, when we're on that call on Tuesday night, if Ohio State is in front of Tennessee, they're going to cite those two wins. But I do think recency bias has been a thing. I think Josh actually had a post earlier saying, like, they care about the eye test. They care about the win-loss record. Doesn't feel like they care about anything else. Well, 1 week they cared about strength of schedule. The other week they didn't. We'll have to see. I completely agree with this statement thrown up on the board here. I honestly feel as if every team in the field has a chance to win, not one true dominant team like in most years. Yeah, like, I mean, other teams are better suited, don't get me wrong, but, you know, Grant and AP and I were talking about this on the way home last night. Like, I think Texas is good. I think Georgia's good. I think Oregon's good. I think Ohio State's good. I don't know about Penn State, to be honest. I don't really know about Indiana. I know about Tennessee, but, like, again, just like in the SEC, there's not that one team that's like clear cut best team in the country. And that's what makes it so exciting. And especially for the first year of this expanded playoff, because there's really no like huge leader in the clubhouse, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's going to be fascinating to watch. We'll see what happens on Tuesday. All right, man, I've drug you into a college football playoff discussion. That's
okay.
Not what a lot of people want to hear here. I enjoy the discussion. A lot of people want to know about recruiting. Let's start first with Shady. What could you tell everybody there? Is there anything going on with Tennessee and Shady at this point? Is that a lock to Florida? What do you think about Onus? What do you think about Tennessee with this class setting 72 hours away from signing day or whatever the hours we're at this point? I don't do math very well.
Yeah, so, I mean, starting with Shady, I think there's an outside chance if you're Tennessee here still. I think you need this to continue to go into Wednesday. You don't need him to do something soon. Obviously, following this decommitment, you need this to go into Wednesday, try to be able to rely on some of these relationships here. But there's been communication there. I think this caught some around Shady Hayward off guard. You know, he's had good communication with Tennessee. I asked about Shady Hayward yesterday, and things seem to be fine there. You know, I think Georgia's felt like at different times in the past month or so that they had a little cautious optimism because of the way that camp had communicated back with the Bulldogs. But now suddenly here we are, Florida's a real player in this. He's on campus at Florida right here before the dead period starts. But if you're Tennessee, I think you've still got an outside shot at this one, you know, but it is that. It's an outside shot, and you just need it to keep going. As far as Onus, you know, Florida tried to get him back to campus this weekend. From everything I've gathered to this point, that trip didn't happen. We'll see where this one goes. I mean, there's talk of him potentially signing in February now. He's not going to be an early enrollee. It would not shock me if he were to take this into February. Again, Eric, you and I talked about this on Trail Tidbits on Wednesday. He's a guy that the process does not stress him at all. Like he enjoys the process. He doesn't get stressed out at any point in the process. He enjoys the people. He enjoys the recruitment. He enjoys the phone calls. He enjoys, you know, just the ins and outs of the process. And I think Florida's made a move here. Florida's made a move with a lot of guys in the last, you know, 7 to 10 days here. They're in play for a lot of guys down the stretch that I don't think anybody had them in play for. You know, just tonight, you know, Joseph Mbachi had originally committed to Florida back in June. They were his first offer before he really played a snap of football here in the States. He decommitted once his season, you know, senior season tape started circulating, blew up, ends up committing to Texas just a week ago and has now flipped back into Florida's class. So the Gators have some real momentum on the trail. So something, you know, worth watching there, you know, with Onus. But as far as Tennessee, you know, continue to check around on some guys tonight, and we'll have to continue to do that throughout each and every day here leading up to the start of the early signing period on Wednesday. I mean, you still feel pretty good where Tennessee is with this class heading into the start of the early signing period. Georgia's going to swing until the very end for a guy like Christian Gass, you know, but I think at this point there's, you know, more optimism on Tennessee's side about that one being done. He's continued to be really good. You know, Georgia's tried. They've had good conversations with the family. You know, Travis Smith, he's another one here down the stretch that's had some schools reach out to him. We'll continue to reach out to him. He's a big-time pass catcher. You know, and there's some schools that can obviously, hey, we're trying to revamp our passing attack, and you're a guy that can fit into what we're trying to do. But I haven't heard anything right now to suggest that Tennessee's in, you know, any kind of trouble there. So this is a really strong class right now for Tennessee on paper, and they're looking to add to it here in the next 72 hours.
All right, Isaiah Campbell's a big name that's out there. North Carolina doesn't have a coach. He seems like he wants to do something early. As Austin said, 2 + 2 = 4. That one feels positive for Tennessee at this point. David Sanders doesn't visit Ohio State this weekend. That one seems to have gone quiet, which to me would be positive to Tennessee. Jaden Pilati, I don't know. I mean, what's going on there?
Jaden Pilati, I don't think, knows at this point really what's going on there. You know, and that's just kind of where he's at with the process. This is one that we'll see if it ends on Wednesday. It could play out later into the week with that 3-day signing window. You know, they would like to have this done before, you know, Friday. Obviously, they've got a big game coming up on Friday against Carrollton, a semifinals game there in the state of Georgia. So it's a big matchup, you know, but in continuing to check around that one, USC's working really hard to keep him in the class, and they've done some things really, really well. But I think, you know, for Perlotti, there's some around him that would like him to stay closer to home, and Tennessee's a real ideal fit in that. So the Vols are heavily involved there, trying to make a late push here to get that one done. But I can tell you, as of Sunday afternoon, there's no firm decision, and I'm not sure anyone in the Perlotti camp knows which way that one's heading just yet, as he's really trying to process a lot. And then, you know, with Tennessee and Tim Merritt, another guy that they're trying to add, you know, I think at this point, Tennessee's picking up some cautious optimism there. There's still a little ways to go here. Miami's fighting really hard to keep him in the class, but, you know, in checking with some folks around this one, I think Tennessee's picked up a little momentum here throughout the weekend, and the Hurricanes are doing all they can to, you know, kind of stymie that.
We kind of circled the bases there. Any other name that we didn't touch on? Anything else we need to know? Again, I know this is Fast and Furious time with the hours leading up to signing day on Wednesday. Anything else that you can tell us right now about Tennessee entering the week and ahead of signing day?
No, I think we probably covered everything there. Again, it turns into be a thrill a minute here at the end. You have to kind of start checking on every guy, you know, throughout the day. There's guys that, I mean, here a couple of weeks ago, Dylan Lewis, Tennessee's one of Tennessee's longest tenured commitments, was on a visit to Georgia with one of his friends. He was literally just there watching the game. Georgia's never offered him. Somebody saw him. Somebody's like, oh, Dylan Lewis is, you know, a prime target for Georgia now. That was never the case. Georgia's never extended an offer there. He was there with C.J. Wiley just checking out the game and went as his guest to the game, you know, but that's just the time of year.
Last thing for me, Matt, as we head out the door here, I mean, do you expect anybody else that maybe doesn't sign, but other than maybe Onus pushing it back to the spring period, or Jaden waiting till later in this week? I mean, we think David Sanders is going to sign on Wednesday. Does it feel like everybody, for the most part, is going to come off the board on Wednesday?
It feels like, for the most part, right now, everyone's going to come off the board on Wednesday at some point throughout the day. You know, the David Sanders situation will obviously be the one that everybody's watching and focusing on. When does that come across? You know, and it's one that could extend. But, you know, kind of just given the way the Sanders family is going about this, I think they probably chose not to go back to Ohio State this weekend to process everything. I mean, when you're at this point in the cycle and you've been as engaged as they have into everything, I don't think another visit was going to, you know, do things one way or another. So I think they probably took this weekend to process everything. And I would imagine at some point on Wednesday, we'll see something come across for him. But you never say never right now.
What can we look forward to on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from you? I know you got a lot of stuff in terms of coverage and Tennessee's signees upcoming.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff coming to the site on Wednesday, and you know, leading into the early signing period, we'll have some more stuff on what to watch for, what we're hearing on Tuesday night going in. And then, you know, we'll have continued coverage on Wednesday of every guy that signs, and a lot of folks I've already talked to a lot of these guys that will be on campus as early enrollees and recap their senior season a little bit and talked about, you know, what they're looking forward to about bowl practice and what they're going to try to do to, you know, carve out a little bit of a role and just, you know, as they get their feet wet, what they're going to be looking for, what they're trying to soak in, what they want to prove to the coach and staff. So it's an exciting time for those guys.
No better time to join us than right now. A silly season sale. We got early signing day coming up on Wednesday. Transfer portal weekend or window opens up next week. Tennessee in the college football playoffs. Basketball is happening right now. Baseball season is right around the corner. Brent Hubbs, it's only the tip of the iceberg right now. If you're catching our stuff, which we appreciate on YouTube, but so much more. You're not going to be disappointed if you join us. The best online Tennessee community out there, it's the General's Quarters of VolQuest.com.
Yeah, no doubt. And, I mean, if you've listened to Matt for the last 15 minutes here or so, you know that he's on top of everything in recruiting along with Austin. And it changes by the minute. So when it changes, when things happen, when news is found out, they go straight to the message board with that and give you all the latest. So if you're a fan of recruiting, it's hard to follow just on these type shows. You need to be engaged on every minute with everything that's going on, and Matt and Austin will continue to, all of us will continue to do that, and then we'll wait and see what happens Tuesday night when the rankings come out. Where are the Buckeyes? What does that mean? Is it going to be a Twitter fight with Tennessee fans, or is it going to be a celebration? We'll see exactly what that looks like on Tuesday night as Tennessee's punch their ticket. The question is, do they host or will they travel? We won't know for sure for another week, but this Tuesday night where Ohio State stands will tell you a lot about what Tennessee's opportunities are and what you need to wish for, hope for on those championship game weekend.
Appreciate you guys for joining us here on the Rocky Top Rewind. A reminder, no show next Sunday night, but we will be back after Tennessee's next game. Tennessee will have another game in the college football playoffs, so we are thankful for that, excited about that. And big shout out and big thank you to our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP for being the proud presenting sponsor of the Rocky Top Rewind all season long. You got a problem, let them find the solution for you. T&T Lawyers, free consultation if you pick up the phone and dial 423-245-4185 or visit them online at SpiveyKingandSpiveyLLP.com. For Matt Ray, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys for joining us here on the Rocky Top Rewind.